Blog Talk Radio. Hello, world. Happy Monday. You're listening to The Garden of Enlightenment with Louie Wildove. Unfortunately, Louie Wildove will not be hosting the show tonight due to the fact that she's under the weather. My name is Grey Eyes Smith, and these shows are brought to you from a group on allpoetry.com called Late Night Poets. And so we are the producers of these shows. And that said, we have anthologies available on Amazon.com filled with poetry from around the world, so feel free to check those out as they help support these shows. And tonight's show is based on a contest that Louie Wildove and myself ran, and it was entitled Your Last Poem of the Year, dated 12/31/21. And so that's what these reads will be from tonight. And that said, I'm going to go to the board here and pick up area code 346. Hi there.
Hey.
Hi, and that's Confess, right?
Yep.
Well, glad to have you. Okay, so I'm going to grab the first. Thank you. I'm going to grab the first poem.
Okay.
And I'm going to post it to the group. And would you mind reading for this, Confess?
Sure. Yeah, because I think it's for the other. The one that I submitted is for the one after this show.
Right, yeah.
Okay. Okay, so I see it's Sabotage?
Right, yes.
It says a user has been deleted.
Oh, really? Let me see. Oh, well, that's terrible. We'll have to go back and find another one for you. Okay, here we go. All right, so I'm going to post this into the group.
Hey,
there
we
go.
I guess that's all right. Oh, Mama, I love this poetry. Okay. In thoughts, in pain. This year was eventful. Four times I slipped and hurt my legs. Swollen, painful, difficult in walking. First dose of COVID vaccination hit me badly. I had several side effects like breathlessness, body pain, weakness. As a housewife and mother, I could not avoid work. Family helped, but cooking, no one knows. Working with pain, agonizing were my days. Slowly it dawned to me, when I am not thinking of pain, it seems to end. While writing and reading poetry, watching TV, and I am unaware of the pain. Pain enlarges when we give it importance. I kept my mind busy in poetry, participating in contests, always thinking of what to pen down. Soon my pain and problems reduced drastically. I learned the biggest lesson of life. If you don't think it, it doesn't exist. At least it surely doesn't bother you much. Now using same technique, I can handle most pain. End poem.
Well, that was a wonderful read, Confess, and a beautiful storyline, you know, of this poem, you know, of not thinking of the pain helps the pain disappear, and losing yourself in poetry and TV, you definitely lose those ebbing and flow of pain, and I thought it was just beautifully done. What did you think of the poem, Confess?
I actually read this one 4 days ago. And I told him or her, and now I'm like, is it a girl or I think it's a girl. So if it is a girl, and this whole time I thought it was a guy, I put, thank you so much for sharing your pain with us. I too had COVID, but no symptoms except for my pride. I couldn't celebrate Christmas with family. So it was, to me, a very relatable poem. I was able to, you know, see myself and also too had pain, but it was more so that inner pain of sadness because I couldn't be with my family. So I also thought this was a beautiful poem.
Wow, I'm sorry to hear that. But great comment. Thank you. Thank you for sharing. Okay. All right, we've got another caller. Welcome to the show, Louie Wildove.
Hey, Grey Eyes. Hi, Confess. You did a fantastic
hey,
job
Mama.
On reading this poem. Hi. You know what I liked about this poem? Poetry has a way to heal so many different things. It can take your mind. You can write your past, your pains, your tears, your agony, your death, your love, your passions. And, you know, and it does help with whatever pain you're going through for those few minutes. You know, it doesn't mean that you're concentrating on pain all the time, but it just means that you're just trying to do something else so that you can not think about being in agony, you know. And that's what I liked about this poem, is that she found a relief for her agony, or his agony, by finding something that would help distract him from the agony he was going through, the pain. It was an excellent poem.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Thank you for sharing with me. Okay, I've got the next poem posted up. Would you mind, Lee, please?
Okay. I don't see it, Gray.
It's up above. It's by Iris 3.
So okay, winter or spring?
All right, let me see if I can find it. Because I'm using my phone, so everything's just tiny. Okay, hold on a second.
You guys are going to be like, what? You've been on here a year? You didn't know it was an app? I literally just signed up today that it was an app. Because let me see if there's an app for this. And it is.
which poem did you want me to read?
December, Winter, or Spring by Iris 3. I can repost it if you need me to.
I see it. I found it. Okay, December, Winter, or Spring by Iris 3. It is the call of a pied bush chat, unleashing chirps of sharps and flats. With brown rock chants on grass each morn, my calming symphony is born. The chubby sparrows, coffee crowned, come waltz on my emerald elderdown, with swarming silver butterflies neath sun-soaked cobalt canvas skies. And common grass yellow youth clubs, inspecting oleander shrubs, play tag with Mormon's onyx flight that swims across the high azure light. Behold, a tailor bird arrives to peer at me, hopscotch and dive, staccato calls from plumage lime, bungee jumping till bedtime. The bahiania overspills to the dress of ground in fragrant frills. This winter flower weaves a lace of pink with blushing orchid face. Now purple sunbirds gangs around, drink sugar from this florid mound. I briskly turn to spot and track their glint, turquoise and mauve on black. Has nature seasoned so, my eyes? I see and hear its gems on rise. The bustle would make summer shy. Perhaps all prefer fresh and dry. December makes it bracing cool for us to coast on sunlit pool of blooms. The butterflies agree, then join the birds in gliding spree. End poem.
Beautiful read, Lee. This is, you know, a deep poem about the seasonal changes and the beauties that lie within each season. I thought it was just wonderfully expressed. What did you think, Confess?
I mean, I love the wording, the wordplay. I've never seen stanzas wrote like this, or written like this, sorry. And so it's even giving me some inspiration on kind of just expressing more in poetry. Like, I always stick to, like, a 4-3-line stanza. I just wrote this scene the other day, but this was beautifully written, and it wasn't overcrowding with too much rhyme or repetition. It told a story in itself. There were some words there that I was hearing for the first time, so I love when I'm reading poetry and I'm learning as well. I love nature-type poetry, and I thought that their job here and the way that they express how they felt about the season. So thank you.
Thank you. Confess, it was a great comment. And Lee, what did you think?
Well, I thought this was a beautiful poem. I agree with everything that Confess said. You know, this was just like watching nature looking out the window. You could literally see all of this. You could see the different birds, the different flowering. You know, winter has its own flowers and its own beauty, and so does spring has its own beauty and its own flowers. And the different butterflies, the different birds, the different flowers, you know, especially in the wintertime, that's when my snow lilies bloom. So, you know, it's just gorgeous. I felt like I was watching nature. You know how, like, sometimes when you watch Nature Channel and they show you in fast motion how flowers bloom and stuff like that and the bees and the butterflies? This is what it reminded me of. It was just gorgeous all the way around.
Well said. Thank you, Lee. Okay, I'm going to bring on another caller here. Area code 703. Is that you, Bobby?
Yes.
Hey, Bobby.
Just as I was about to dial in, my doorbell rang, and it was the groceries I ordered yesterday.
Oh, no.
Oh, no. Well, at least they made it.
Yes.
So now I'll have something to eat tomorrow.
Did you get a chance to hear?
Well, I'm glad you got your groceries.
Me too. I got groceries, but not a chance to hear the poem. But it sounds like it was wonderful.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Thank you, Bobby. Okay, I'm going to grab another caller here. Area code 512. Is that you, Frank?
Yeah. Can you hear me?
I can.
Thank you. Yeah, you can hear me. Okay. It's good to be on. Hello, everyone.
Hi, and so welcome to the show, Bobby and Frank. Okay, so I'm going to grab the next poem here. And if you wouldn't mind, please, Bobby, when you see this.
No, I don't mind. I'm sorry. You caught me. I wasn't paying attention because I just knocked a bunch of papers over on the floor. I was like, thank you, Bobby.
Must be those groceries there, Bobby. A grocery.
Well, it was only paper, you know. It's easy to clean up. Not like you have to break out a mop. Okay, we have When Winter's Nigh, Meditative Ballad by A. Shagnofsky. When winter's nigh, the swallows fly to sunny climes far, far away. By some strange sense, they seem to know the time has come for them to go. And they will die if they should stay. By some strange sense, they seem so know to travel south and never stray. Some inner instinct guides their way. The time has come for them to go. When winter's nigh, by some strange sense, they seem to know that winter's call they must obey. The time has come for them to go. The swallows fly. The swallows fly when winter's nigh. End poem.
Wow, that was a beautiful read, Bobby. And you can see all this as he describes it. When winter's nigh, the swallows fly, taking flight to migrate to a warmer climate. Otherwise, they'll die in the cold. And, yeah, I thought it was just powerfully written. What did you think of that?
And I agree. I thought this was very beautiful. And, again, another learning moment for me. I've never heard of a meditative ballad, so... this is why I love this forum, and I love you guys because I just keep learning. And I love the way he wrote his stanza. And at the end, you know, there's that two stanza line, and it just brings it back. It just reminds you what he was writing about and why he was writing about it. It's very beautiful. And I love the the third stanza when he says, by some strange sense, this seems so new. To travel south and never stray. It's kind of like saying they have birds or anyway, like have this embedment of them and traditionally throughout, I guess, centuries to know this route. I even remember watching this movie called Far Away Home or something, when the girl had like these birds, she like raised and had to send them back
to a warmer climate, and she was all the way in Canada and came all the way to, like, the United States. So I thought that was it reminded me of that movie. So that it was beautiful.
Great comment. Thank you, Confess. And Bobby, what did you think?
Well, I like the comment that, yes, it's a Fly Away Home, and it was based on a true story. A nice analogy to the swallows. I like the structure. I find myself very drawn to these very rigorous structures, and when you read them, they have a very melodic repetition to them, and it's, from a technical point of view, in the same way, but it also has a way of cycling the idea by changing the lines around. And I really enjoy what he's said here. He's right. They seem to always know when they're supposed to go and how, and that instinct in them I find so remarkable with all animals, and it's so beautiful. I really like the way he expressed this.
Great comment. Thank you, Bobby. And Frank, what did you think?
I have to say I agree. The whole notion of winter, you know, just like all seasons, there is a transient period there, you know. And what's so unique is that the birds themselves, they seem to know, you know, they know, you know, when it's time to migrate, you know. Although some birds do not migrate, but swallows are one that really I enjoy, you know, seeing them about. But I like the whole notion here of how that period of time, you know, can be incorporated or actually can be, you know, envisioned or invoked by a swallow, or by swallows in this case. I thought it was a great poem.
Thank you, Frank. That was a wonderful comment. Okay, so I've got the next poem up, and this is by the poet, and she has a SoundCloud.
The Surgeon. This church is in my blood. My bones and my ancestors lie in this church. In life, I fixed man's flesh and bones. I was the father of many men of medicine. Some of my children traveled to...
That was the wrong SoundCloud for that poem. Frank, would you mind reading this for us, please?
Yes, no problem. And I have to know that fellow there, Brian. You know, the person who was reading. This is called A Holy Ghost, and it goes like this. I just found the grave on my great-great-grandfather's grave on Facebook. It gave me a fright. The article said Dr. Thomas Robert Mason, 1840 through 1975. How come my family never talked of him? My dad met his daughter once she was old, but never met him. It was shocking. So my dad pointed out his grave, said he died at 31. That typo brought him back to life for a moment. End of poem.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry, I was looking down at all this. It was written down. I was hoping that's the end of the poem because I saw so much. He's got song clouds in here.
Yeah, absolutely. That was a great read. And it says in the author's note, me and my dad were puzzled by this till we read on, he said, he died at 31, not 135, typos. And, that was a beautiful storyline of finding your grandfather's grave on Facebook and it giving them a fright. My dad never met his daughter once. He was old, but never met him. It was shocking until my dad pointed out that his grave said he died at 31. That typo brought him back to life for a moment. It is fascinating, the storyline to that. And what did you think, Confess?
I don't know. It brought me back to when you see anyone's headstone, and everyone wants that the best headstone. You know, he was a great father, son, brother, and then you have. I just imagine someone having a typo on your gravestone. Like, it definitely brings. I think it brings the reader to life. Like, wait, what? You know, like, how dare they? So I thought that was like it was a hint of humor in this, like. It seemed like it was supposed to be like a, not sad, but more like a matter-of-fact type of poem. And then it threw in that little bit of humor. Well, for me, it was humor because I'm like, how dare they, you know? But I loved it. It was short, sweet, piece of the plate.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you, Confess. And Bobby, what did you think?
Oh, I think the brevity is a beautifully told story. It was such an economical write. It was so compact. I love the last line. It was a flip. All of a sudden, you read this and you go back and do the agonizing math, and you realize that it should have been 1875. And it was very interesting, and it actually reminded me of something I haven't thought about for years. My father was, even though he was adopted, when they adopted him, they changed his name to his adopted father's name. And my dad, we were a family from the 50s, so of course, every weekend you'd go for a drive. And it's when we didn't care about burning fossil fuels. Anyway, he took us to where he grew up, and we got to see his house. But then he remembered where his father was buried. And so we went to the cemetery, and I think we went maybe once or twice. But it was the oddest thing to look down at a gravestone and see my father's name and my father standing next to it. I should have gotten a picture, but it was a very eerie feeling. And when I read this, that whole incident flashed back at my father pointing and going, this is really weird.
Yeah.
So I enjoyed the poem, and I enjoyed the flashback.
Well, thank you for that, Bobby. Thank you for sharing. And Frank, what did you think?
Well, you know, it's very odd, I would say there. You know, the whole notion of Facebook nowadays, to utility there, it gives you so much access, like other applications as well. But this whole notion of, you know, of discovering a lost, lost loved one, particularly one you've never met, is it's very endearing. You know, although it seems haunting, you know, it still reminds us, you know, how much we are attached to our, you know, our historical references, whether they are relatives or they are just mere strangers or mere acquaintances. You know, it's a powerful image when you go to a cemetery. I've been there so many times, you know, not lately, but it does conjure a lot of, you know, images in your mind, you know, and I thought this poem was, you know, did bring that Holy Ghost there. At least for a moment, I felt that.
Yeah, I agree. Thank you, Frank. Great comment.
Oh, you're welcome.
Okay, I've got the next poem up. This is by Fantail, and it's called Lifesaver. She was caught in heavy seas, fraught with cross currents and wild waves of confusion, crashing against the rugged coastline, erupting in a sea spray of indecisions beneath jagged cliffs of worry and doubt, as she desperately searched for that lighthouse of wisdom shining across the bay, illuminating the sandy shores of reassurance. Wow. I thought that was a beautiful piece and poem. You know, fabulous imagery and just a wonderful brevity with awesome metaphors as well. Just fantastic, right? And what did you think, Confess?
This takes me back to, like, Frank, like the way that she wrote this out. It's taking me back to this book. Like, I just thought it was great. So I always try to work on a format like this, and it never works for me. I love the format. I love the tone. I love how on one of the stanzas, she has, like, the letters in between separated, and which brought me to Crank. And how it's like supposed to, what's the word I want to use? Like, it's like a flashlight. It's like, hey, this is, I want you to see that this is crashing against the rugged coastline. It's erupting in the sea spread of indecisions. Like, that writing, right? It's just beautiful. So those two stanzas are beautiful. And I just love the language here and the imagery. Alone was beautiful. I love the imagery and the poem, and they did it fantastically.
Well, that was a great comment, Confess. And Bobby, what did you think?
I'm always impressed by poets that can format their poetry in such a way that not only are they giving you a written word picture, but a visual imagery as well. And this one does a lovely job of that. I am also struck by the fact that you use the traditional terminology of referring to a vessel as she, which I was impressed with. It's very traditional. And the way that he also, or I should say, it's she, excuse me, also conveys a message of not only rough sailing, literally, but in this case, rough sailing metaphorically, and the person looking for the lighthouse of wisdom, which I thought this was just a brilliantly done piece, and the extended metaphor is quite impressive.
Absolutely. Wonderful comment, Bobby. Thank you. And Frank, what did you think?
Oh, I have to say, I'm going to agree. The metaphors were spectacular in this piece here. You know, the whole notion of, you know, being, you know, caught in heavy seas, you know, fraught with cross currents and wild waves, you know, so, you know, so be it. You know, it only seems that it's a very intense, you know, the poem, you know, the beginning. But then there's that offering there of that glimpse of light through the lighthouse there. And I like that structure of the lighthouse that she structured there. I like the illuminating notion of the sandy shores of reassurance. This was really a metaphorical piece here, but, you know, that perhaps, you know, has much more of a deeper meaning, a deeper message to it, that perhaps, you know, when we are going through our bouts in, you know, of struggle, that we somehow we seem to find, you know, or seek, you know, that light, lighthouse of wisdom to give us that reassurance in life to go on. You know, it's a very evocative piece.
Well said, thank you, Frank. Okay, I've got the next piece up. It's by Chaos, and he has a SoundCloud, so we'll play that.
I want to grow. I want to know, can you show infinite growth?
Contrary, doing it different.
I want to lay in your embrace. Night deep, starlight days. For a million starlight days. In a million starlit ways. Are we right? Heaven knows. There's many holes in the hose. While watering the shrubs, the thorny prick of a rose scratches me up while pruning close. But you must know, the more vulnerable the tools, the harder things grow. There's strength in what's broken, that heaven knows. And like the waves crash, like the seas mad, like the water laps over feet, soft then has an almighty whiplash. Rips and currents, channels hunting, ice cream loving, diving lunging. I want to grow, I want to know, can we show infinite growth? I wonder how many mistakes the sea has hidden. I wonder how many escapes love's rollercoaster prison. I wonder the connections erased in the tsunami kitchen. Waves and waves of wisdom wash us away. I'm just wishing that we survive the sea's unpredictability. That we're alive and free, not stuck characteristically. Because we can't let go, want to be each other's infinity. I want to grow, I want to know, can you show infinite growth? Moving forth on the board, surfing the game of life. Remember that game, a million rolls of the dice. And that's true for all walks, all races of life. A million ways for connections to break. A million ways to die. While at that pace, in that race, watch out for slippery, slimy snakes. Be still, freeze, tie a rope. The poison spreads if you panic and haste. Mystery turns while I step on a stake. Impale my foot while others take steps towards their own fate. And when we pack that board away, I'll call it Nate. Because what I hope is you are and game. But away, I'll call it night, because what I hope is you are in game. I hope you are in game. I want to grow. I want to know, can we show infinite growth?
Well, that was a beautiful rap read, and I really liked her rhythm and flow in this. And, you know, the point of the poem hits home hard. You know, can we, I want to grow, can we show infinite growth? And then she repeats that throughout the poem. But it was just a fabulous, right? Both beautiful metaphors and just a touching poem about love and her end game being neat. Just beautiful job. And what did you think, Confess?
Yeah, I thought that this was really beautiful. And it does express to me, like, she's even asking for that infinity that we call even maybe marriage, you know, like, hey, I want you to even propose to me, and I want you to see, hopefully you see what I see. I want to lay in your embrace, knee deep, night deep starlight gaze for a million starlight days and a million starlight waves. That, just the beginning of that, it was like, okay, she's going to go in. But it was beautiful. I love it. I love the way she feels about this person. I love how she's wondering if, you know, her mistakes, does she have to hide her mistakes? Does she need to escape? Is it going to be a roller coaster or a prison? Like, it's like she's even questioning, you know, the relationship. Like, do you feel like this? Like, I feel like we're good, but do you feel like it's like a prison to you? You know, it's like, she's like, but even if you're not, I just hope this. I hope we're moving forward. I hope that you see me in a million different ways, just like I see you. So I loved it. It was great.
Great comment. Thank you, Confess. And Bobby, what did you think?
Well, this was a real stunner. I mean, I did not expect, when I heard the background music, Gabrielle Fauré's Pavane, a classical, I thought, well, you know, I thought we were in for something like, all of a sudden I cannot think of the man's name. Titus Llewellyn. I thought we were going to be treated to something like that, and all of a sudden it broke into rap. But Gabrielle Fauré's Pavane was still in the background, and I thought, how clever and agile to put rap to classical music. I thought that was from a technical standpoint. I thought it was brilliant, and the storytelling in it is intense. I think that the rap, to hear rap in a southern accent, again, it was like the classical music and juxtaposed with the rap. I thought the contrasts in this, the rap to the music and her accent to the rap and the message in it, just a wonderful combination, just mesmerizing.
Absolutely. Fantastic comment, Bobby. Thank you. And Frank, what did you think?
Well, first of all, I think that Kales is, if I'm not mistaken, she's Australian. No need really to have said that, but I was really did enjoy the notion here of this poem here. I like the rap. I'm used to her rap, you know, I mean, the group there, you know, with her, one of the groups we have with Afficiona and others. And I've heard some of her, you know, her songs, you know, her rap. And this is this one here really did surprise me here. You know, she's really improved a lot here. I like the rhyming scheme of this piece here, you know, the growth and overshowing the growth. Then she goes on with, you know, just giving us, you know, verse after verse, you know, it has this lyrical form as well. But I like the acknowledgement of this piece here. I really like what has been said here, you know, how she really, you know, sits there and wonders and ponders about the worth of this relation and gives us through her metaphors, you know, that whole psychological journey or odyssey there of this relationship and how much, you know, it's affected her, you know. But at the end, you know, she keeps on repeating the same chorus there. I want to grow. I want to know. Can you show infinite growth? It almost seems that although this person here that perhaps has scarred her, you know, it seems that she still, you know, hangs on to this person here in one way or another, you know. And, you know, she said it's an end game, but, you know, sometimes we can never know, or we can never definitely say it is the end.
Yeah, absolutely. Well said. Thank you, Frank. Okay, I've got the next poem up. If you wouldn't mind, please confess. I'm going to repost it, though. It's by Kendall.
Oh, yeah. Let me go back. Prolife by Kendall. Hi, Kendall. Okay. Semi-prolife. Bustin' a nutshell. A heaven sent can't make change until you're a day late and a dollar short going over that hill. They got you buried under. Trying to quench that thirst killed my appetite for hunger. So heads up, it's tails. I'm chasing dreams with dollars. And I don't need you or your problem solvers. They want me to let it rest in peaceful solutions, where here lies confusion to see truth, where your grip on reality loosens. People keeping it real, always see both sides of the struggle. Growing old, digging graves, we're all born with a spoon or a shovel. End poem.
Fantastic read. And, you know, this is a beautiful poem, full of juxtapositions and metaphor, just a beautifully rich poem. What did you think, Bobby?
This is so Kendall. you're right. There is a lot of this is there's a lot of juxtaposition in this. Lot of contrast in it, and it makes you want to read it again slowly, so you can really perceive what he's saying. So heads up, it's tails. I'm chasing dreams with dollars, and I don't need you or your problem solvers. He's got some great assonance going in this piece, almost a song lyric quality of assonance. Dollars, solvers, solutions, loosens. But the message in this brevity is really quite wry, and I really enjoy this piece for its clever, dark humor.
Absolutely. Thank you, Bobby. And Frank, what did you think?
Well, I have to agree. You know, this particular writer has been one that I've actually known through contests previously, and I've always been entertained. You know, this piece here almost seems, you know, lyrical. It almost seems it can be, you know, put into a sense of rap as well. You know, I really like the notion here, you know, it's a semi-pro-life. Now, it almost seems that, you know, life in itself is about, you know, trying to discover, you know, where you're at in life, you know, and we go through up and downs in life. But I like this whole notion here of, you know, I'm chasing dreams of dollars. I don't need you or problem solvers, you know, to get beyond the rhyming there. There is that sense of, you know, of you know, delving into life, you know, and going through the flow of experiences and realizing, you know, the good and bad of life and realizing what one can be aspired to achieve in life. And at the same time, be heedful, you know, of the things that one must heed when it comes to life, you know. It's a very intricate piece there. It's somewhat abstract, but it does have many thoughts attached to the poem.
Absolutely. Thank you, Frank. And confess, what did you think of the poem that you read?
I agree with Frank. I love Kendall. I always follow his poetry. That's probably why I was like connecting a little bit, you know, because his flow is always, he always has some like sarcasm. So I love his, I love the way that he makes fun of certain things, and I love the way that he, even like serious topics, I love how he can just make it relatable and have people like, okay, and think, and okay, where is he going here? I love to read between lines. I love the metaphors here. And I love the straightforwardness as well. So that was beautiful.
Thank you, Confess. Okay, Bobby, I have the next write-up, if you wouldn't mind, please.
Not at all. Okay. We're going, apologies to Lewis Carroll. Okay.
Right.
I love the title already. Okay. Apologies to Lewis Carroll by Lulu G. I thought I saw the smallest elf sat upon a fallen log, but when I looked again, I saw a foreign-looking frog. There's one thing you should know, I said. Beware the snarling dog. I thought I saw a ginger cat in woolly hat and shawl, but when I looked again, I saw a boy, not tall, but small, and realized with great relief 'twas only Cousin Paul. I thought I saw a blue giraffe with elbows in the sink, but when I looked again, I saw a chain with missing link. A mystery, I said aloud, with ne'er a blink nor wink. I thought I saw a wise old owl with pen and magazine, but when I looked again, I saw an answering machine. Your message aren't clear, I cried, with static in between. I thought I saw a Gruffalo, not going anywhere, but when I looked again, I saw a thousand people there. You can't stay now to eat, I said. The cupboard here is bare. I thought I saw a lioness on board the train to Maine, but when I looked again, I saw my father back from Spain. And are you home again for good? I said, if so, I'll pop champagne. I thought I saw an elephant that sang a lullaby, but when I looked again, I saw a castle in Versailles. And now I'm feeling not so good with thoughts to wonder why. End poem.
I like it. You know, it's fun and it's quirky. It's full of fabulous imagery. And, you know, I think we all have these kind of days where everything we see is not what it seems. And I thought this was fabulously expressed. Countess, what did you think? Or Confess, sorry.
I said, who, Countess? Okay, I'll be a Countess. I thought it was great, and it touches on, I believe, as soon as you think of Lewis Carroll, you think of surrealism, right? So I was like, hey, this would have been good for the surrealism contest, too. But aside from that, I thought it was very good. I love imagery. I always say that, so you guys are probably hearing me say that a thousand times. I'm really a sucker for imagery. I like to visualize what I'm reading. And here I could do that. Here I could see the quirkiness. I thought I saw a ginger cat and woolly hat and shawl. But when I looked again, I saw a boy, not tall, but small. It's like I saw the boy, I saw the cat, and I saw that he wasn't that tall anymore. And I love that. And I love when they add names to the poetry so it becomes more personal. And you're like, hey, I know someone named Paul. So I love when people write like that. And again, I love how the format and the stanzas here. I love the metaphors, and I love the personification, just like Lewis Carroll would do, right? So I think they did great, and I think Lewis Carroll would be proud.
Well, thank you, and I agree. And Frank, what did you think?
Well, I'm going to have to agree with what's been said here. The whole notion of the Lewis Carroll, you know, influence is very much seen in this poem. I like the language here. It is very much sounds like a Victorian poem here, you know, the structure here. I see some you know, the structure, the uses of words here, you know, that is very much the format. It could be a Victorian piece here. I like the innocence in this piece here, you know. You know, when you write this type of you know, poetry with you know, imagery of fantasy and that, you know, imagination, you know, it becomes, it enriches the poem here with the metaphors here. It allows us as well to venture, you know, with our imagination through our creativity. So I really like this notion here of the poem Tarara. I thought it was it's rare that I see these types of poems anymore. And I thought I thought you did a fantastic job with this piece here.
Excellent comment. Thank you, Frank. And Bobby, what do you think?
Oh, I loved it. I've already stuck it in my favorites list. I thought it was bloody brilliant. It is so well written. It has, like Frank said, has the classical feeling to it. It does have the flavor of Lewis Carroll or even of some of the other nonsense poets like Dr. Seuss, because she's indulged in, like Dr. Seuss and Lewis Carroll, some imaginative language, a gruffalo. the visual imagery in this, the storytelling, is just marvelous. But there's a really, there's a nimble mind at work here. I mean, just the different imaginings, the different combinations. She's not bounded her thinking in any way and has come up with some really wonderful visual imagery and a great poem. I thoroughly enjoyed this.
Thank you, Bobby. That was a great comment. And Frank, would you mind reading for me, please?
This is a brevity here, and it's by Liquid Mind Forever. It's called Naked and Forsaken. And it goes like this. Sequestered, I lie, half-baked, bare, naked absence like a razor's door blade. Between my thighs, loins ache for sake. Empty coins, coppery taste, scalded cold against shawl. Keeners eat my sin within iron-gated tombstone. Overgrown and overcome, strangles and passion without pulse. What else will you stamp upon this crutch of flesh? But here lies the hungry carcass of a lorna dune, nibbled round the edges, leaving crumbs for posterity. End of poem.
Beautiful read, Frank. And, you know,
thank
this you. Is a power-packed little brevity. You know, you can see her laying near baked, I mean, half naked near baked. And between her thighs, loins ache forsake, empty coins, coppery taste, scalded cold up against Sheol. I had to Google what keeners meant, and it meant for those that sing to the dead. And but no, I thought it was just a wonderfully woven poem full of fabulous imagery. And what did you think, Confess?
Well, I love how it flows. I'll say that. I love how it flows. I love that it has a kind of an old school way that we used to write, like Emily Dickinson, how she had her own little words. It took me back there, and it was just beautiful. And I love how, you know, there is mentions of different countries or maybe someone's name. I love that when people use these different metaphors that it brings you back to, like, when they say carcass of lunar dune. My mom used to love those cookies, okay? So it's another relatable poem. You just find little pieces. It's like they gave me little pieces of themselves and also helped me see myself in a way in my childhood. So I thought it was beautiful.
Well, that's a great comment, Confess. Thank you. And Bobby, what did you think?
This is a very cerebral write. I mean, this is a very... this brevity is very intellectual. She's got several different cultures in here, some mixed metaphor. There it is. I just scanned right past the doggone poem. Here it is. Okay. It talks about Sheol, which is a Hebrew a place for the dead. Keeners, I recognize because one of my favorite phrases is when someone's unhappy with someone, there's much keening and wailing, which is, grievers will keen and wail. But she's got the visual imagery in this. You have got to be really paying attention to what she said here. Empty coins, coppery taste. Scalded cold. Who among us hasn't had that taste in their mouth at one point or another for whatever reason? And here lies the hungry carcass of a Lorna Doone. And it, not only the rectangular cookie, but it's also a novel from, I think it's the 1800s. It's a romantic novel from the UK. So she's got two meanings in there. You know, could be the hungry carcass of a forsaken love nibbled around the edges. So this is a really agile mind at work here, pulling in a lot of erudition to give us a very, like you said, an action-packed, very profound, very intense, very dense light here in this brevity.
Thank you, Bobby. That was a great comment. And Frank, what did you think?
Well, you know, you look at that title there, and it's self-explanatory, naked and forsaken. It's got this feeling with this piece here that, you know, I don't know much about the character or the book of Lorna Doone, a little bit, I recall. But I do know that this whole notion here of what is being presented here is very visceral in the sense, and it's very, very haunting. But I like the notion of how, you know, how one, a body can be naked, at the same time forsaken, you know, because we go through the process of life and we go through the process of death. We are born naked and we die pretty much naked because we're eaten up in a sense, you know, by the earth. We come from the earth and we go back to the earth, you know, for some of us. So I really like this, you know, she says leaving crumbs for posterity. So, you know, that's really daunting there. But I really like, you know, I'm used to I'm used to listening to and reading more of her poetry. It's longer. This is a brevity I've not really seen her write. But I do agree with Bobby, this is a very intellectual piece.
Well said. Thank you, Frank. Okay, we've got The Sheep and the Goats by Samir Aman, and it goes, the compassionate heart will react so speedily and will rush immediately towards the distressed and the needy. The compassionate heart is drawn inexplicably by the rushing currents of mercy, the heart that is bursting at the seams with rivers reviving mercy, the rivers that pour from underneath the throne of the Merciful One, the divine rivers which are unrestricted by any material dams, whether those dams are built out of self-interest or fear. The empathetic heart is like a gentle rain, falling like divine tears on wilted land. After the dying land's inhabitants have given up all hope of survival and were thrown into the bottomless pit of despair, the inhabitants of the bottomless pit despair, who will feel ashamed of their previous pessimism when they shall be saved by caring, revitalizing, merciful tears. The compassionate heart, which is always full of joy, whenever it could bring a smile upon the upset eyes, and takes great pleasure in alleviating the plight of the poor. The pleasures that have permanent home in the unfettered, gushing river of mercy's unchangeable core, the unchangeable core that runs through all positive attributes and serves as the stem of fruitful branches, whereas branches that do not bear fruit, on the other hand, will be denied life itself because they refuse to yield the fruit of the reviving water of kindness. And it was the end poem. But no, that was a beautiful, right, you know, with fabulous imagery and context. You know, it really makes one think about what we're doing here and why we're doing it. You know, empathy is a beautiful thing, and I thought that this poem described that quite beautifully. What did you think, Confess?
Well, my first thought came to how we treat the world. You know, I feel like we give more rewards to those with, like, wealth and money. And then those without money or wealth, we kind of just put them to the side when I feel like it should be the other way around. It's like, you can help yourself. Why am I helping you more, you know? And we do that all the time. It's like it's a illness or something. It's like some kind of mindless obsession with people who have more. It's so annoying, right? And then you have this person saying, you know, whereas the branches that do not bear fruit, on the other hand, we deny life itself, which is true. Like, you know, you have people in poverty and homeless, and, you know, we don't have funds for that, but we have $9 billion for Elon Musk to follow his dreams, you know, even though he's already rich. So I think I said this comment before earlier in the week here, but it still goes to show how we all can see this, you know, and what do we do at the end of the day about the uncompassionate ones, you know? And that's why I love poetry. It seems like every poet I meet have that same compassionate heart here. And it's like, hey, I'm thinking about this. I have that compassion heart. I have the compassion to care and give mercy to those who deserve it. And this is just beautiful.
Great comment. Thank you. Confess. And Bobby, what did you think?
It does speak very strongly to the concept of altruism and living a useful life. I'm trying to remember. I think there was. I'm guessing and I'm reaching. It said Einstein said something about a life, a useful life is a life worth living, or something to that effect. I'm probably very poorly paraphrasing. But this author's work is always a very, very intensely spiritual, very deep, always seems to have an eye toward the human condition, a very empathetic eye. And the way he's written it here, the compassionate heart, which is always full of joy whenever it can bring a smile to upset eyes. Again, the altruism, not necessarily monetary, but just in reaching out to other humans. This is a very powerful piece.
Well, that was a great comment. Thank you, Bobby. And Frank, what did you think?
Well, you know, and this is a very powerful piece. I've read several of his pieces, you know, and I've seen them on podcasts, particularly here. I like the whole notion of the compassionate heart. As a philanthropist myself, I do advocate compassion, you know, given to the needy, you know, because I've been there. I know what it feels like. I think he draws in a bit of spirituality in this piece, but he also brings a side of our, you know, our humanity. You know, we often, you know, like what was said here before, we sometimes get mired in just materiality. We don't realize that regardless of what we possess, in the end, you know, as I said before, we will die as we are born in the same manner. You know, flesh will come, flesh will go. But, you know, all these things that we, you know, aspire to, you know, whether, you know, commodities, you know, you can get buried with them. Believe me, I've known someone who's done that, but it makes no difference. It's still not going to save you from, you know, going on to a life after if there is, or even, you know, even avoiding death and itself. It's a beautiful write, you know. There's so much here that's really, you know, said in this piece here that really just evokes, you know, stirs the mind. And it's one of these poems that we should really pay, you know, attention to what he's trying to say here and the message here.
Absolutely. Yeah, I agree. Thank you, Frank. Okay, Frank, I've got your poem up, and you have a SoundCloud, so go.
Yeah, one quick second, if I can say. There is a little bit at the end, a sound effect there of cats there, so that's, I just want to warn you there.
Sorry, a sound of cats?
Yeah, it's a cat effect at the end.
Oh, okay. All right, thank you, Frank. Here we go.
The sweet silence of the day has been interrupted suddenly by the penetrating perturbation of roaring raindrops of a tempest looming over the sleeping selves of the creepy crawlers lurking beyond the old abandoned road of the Centurio Cemetery ahead. The seducing sounds of the solitary silhouettes resonate, an eldritch echo of the curious carts hiding in a shade of darkness, when the nocturnal creatures of the spooky sanctuary watch, with the crimson plume of the BTRs of throbbing tear. The wailing winds of the cemetery reach the windows of townsfolk, waiting for the haunting call to abate with the raging rain, as the clustered children hide under the beds with sheer fright, and the swaying shutters flap back and forth with all force. Scratching paws and horrible hissing of the emergent evil, glowing eyes of a menacing moonlight hovers high above, like a blissful light reflected from the burning brimstone, for the collisionist cats are aware of your susceptibility. Death is a blind mystery that only a few will resolve its enigma, and barriers a secret that remains hidden within the episodes of life, where the strangest beings of all thus reside beside us forever, with the strangest occurrences that torment our fragile minds. Can you hear the cats? Can you hear the cats?
You can cut it if you want.
Actually, it won't let me. We'll have to.
There you go.
Sorry. Well, that was a fantastic read, Frank. Very theatric and
animated. I threw a bit of
really
Christopher Lee there in the voice there.
Yeah, I really like the voice that you use. It was fantastic. The whole poem was, you know, you can feel the hauntingness of this poem throughout the write, and it really hits home.
Well, I appreciate
and makes you want to join. Makes you want to join those
Thank
kids
you very much.
Under the bed.
Yeah, it's inspired by Pet Cemetery, the film there.
Yeah, no, I see that. But that's a beautiful job, Frank. Excellent done.
Oh, I appreciate that.
Excellently done. And confess, what did you think?
Wait, did I scare her off? Oh, there.
Yeah, confess.
I'm just feeling like, wow, what just happened? This is great. Okay. You're my life. Okay. Frank, that was amazing. I just love his voice. It just took me back to that tent. I'm sorry. I can't even talk. I'm just still flabbergasted. Okay. It was great. It took me back to Penn Cemetery for sure. It was something that I wanted to say, and then I lost my train of thought. Okay, here it is. So you were like, when you said in the last stanza, death is a blind mystery that only a few resolve an enigma, and the burial is a secret that remains hidden within the episodes of life. I felt that so much because I remember leaving a comment to someone, and we were talking about death, and we were talking about how, you know, if, say, for instance, we all just decided to go against the powers that be, you know, because we were making a conversation about how it's more of us than it is of them, right? They're 1%, okay? So, and that's around the world. Okay, cool. But what if it'd be so magical to die and to be reborn, to become something as powerful as that and change it all, right? And then I know this has nothing to do with death, but in a way it does. Because, you know, you can have and resolve this enigma, hopefully, right? You can die and see what death looks like, and then hopefully be reborn into something that can change our thought processes, right? It's just hopeful thinking. I thought that was beautiful. And I don't know. I just love the voice. You just threw me totally off with this that tone, the pitch, the voice, the scream, the laugh at the end. That was classic. Thank you so much for that.
Well, I appreciate that. If I can say one quick thing, I hope no one gets a notion here that the sound that you heard was of a torturing cat. It was just a sound effect from YouTube that I just got for a hitting cat. It's not my intention to put that on there to sound like the cat was being tortured. I did want to say that.
Okay.
It's just with the poem. It was just something I used for the poem there.
Okay.
We know you would never
do that.
Yeah.
I just want to make that disclaimer there.
Thank you, Frank. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
So I'm going to grab the next poem, and Bobby, when you see this, can you please read it?
Sure. If you don't want my comment on Frank's poem.
Oh, I'm sorry, Bobby. Yeah, no, go ahead.
I'm sorry for how long it'll be. I try not to be, I swear.
Well, confess said it all. You know, what can I say? Actually, now Gray is just sitting there shaking his head. I really enjoyed this, Frank. I love the way you channeled a combination, a hybrid of Vincent Price and Boris Karloff in the voice. I really love that. I just wonder how many cigars you had to smoke to get it down that far. But the storytelling in this is wonderful. I mean, this is so Poe-esque. In your writing, just the beautiful visual imagery, creepy crawlers lurking, central cemetery, the wailing winds of the cemetery, and just the whole thing. I mean, you've given us such a rich a picture here in this writing it is as storytelling. I think it is very fine storytelling. Scratching claws,
yeah.
And horrible. I really enjoyed it. I'm sorry.
I appreciate
that.
Go ahead. Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to tell Gray that you needn't have worried, Frank. We all who know you and love your poetry know that you've already found the key to tormenting us. If you want to. All you have to do is write some of that sexy poetry and have us all sliding out of our seats.
Oh, wait.
I'd rather you torment me that way.
I'll think of it next time. One quick thing. I don't want to lose the show. We'll not lose the show tonight. Gray. When I saw your contest there, you said it was the last poem, you know, and this was the actual last poem I wrote on last year. So that's why I brought this piece in. And I wanted to bring, you know, some of my theatrical, you know, dark pieces as well from time to time on your show as well. So I brought this one here. So I had fun as well.
Absolutely.
It was a marvelous performance.
I agree. Thank you very much. I appreciate that. Thank you.
And Sawa, what did you think?
It was terrifying. It gave me goosebumps. You know me with darkness. It's not my thing. It really is creepy and spooky, so you succeed. At the beginning, I didn't recognize your voice. I thought it was someone else.
It's me doing another voice. It's like me trying to... It's doing a Christopher Lee there.
That's scary. I hope I sleep tonight. If not, Frank.
Oh, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. Paul.
No,
I'm just kidding.
I'm just kidding. No, it's okay. It's okay. I will be fine. There are a lot of poems coming. I'm really chicken. It's me. It's not you. I'm glad
I'm here. We got Bobby's piece next. Bobby's piece will make you forget my piece.
Okay. It's a great write, as always. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to.
Right.
Move, I didn't.
Well,
if you're worried
that.
About going to sleep, I'll read you my piece. I'll put you right to sleep.
Okay. Go ahead. You're up then.
That is a challenge. I really did love the performance on your piece, though, Frank. I really did.
Oh, definitely.
Well, I appreciate that. Thank you very much.
Okay, this was the last piece I wrote for a contest for Lynn Gaultier's her brevities. I mean, writing for her contests, I've really gotten much better at writing brevities. So this was to it was to a picture, a photograph similar to the one that I have up there, which is an acacia tree, but it was it looked like the African savanna. So I wrote to this. I called "Dancing to Silent Music." The sun ablaze across a cloudless horizon. The sky superheated hues of tangerine and amber. Torrid air rising from the arid llano creates optical illusion. Undulating refractions distort nature's parched portrait. Like looking through shimmering glass, a quiver and alive. The terrain, a mercurial phantasm, dancing to silent music. End poem.
It was a beautiful read and a beautiful poem, you know, with fabulous imagery. And, you know, you can feel all this as you read through it. Torrid air rising from the arid llano creates optical illusion. Undulating refractions distort nature's parched portrait. And you can see all that with your own eyes as you would describe your right. And I thought it was just a beautiful job, Bobby.
Thank you.
What did you think?
I loved it. It is what a brevity is. I think you put it concisely, exactly how it's supposed to be. And I also appreciate the definition here of what Alana was, because, you know, I thought I was a pretty good poet. You know, I thought I studied pretty good these last couple of years, but I'm still learning, and I appreciate when someone even explains their poetry in that, you know, box for the author notes. And here you told me it's an extensive grassy plain with three trees, and you would never even know that with that one word. So that's like concise in that brevity for me. And then the imagery here is just beautiful. You know, you're looking through shimmery glass, a quiver and a line with rain. Ah, I just love when words just flow. It's like a fluttering butterfly. Thank you.
Well, thank you so much. What a lovely compliment. I also thank you for your feedback. Having a heavy science background, I find that very often I will make references that will leave people either confused or baffled or just basically, what the hell is she talking about? So I find that when I use words that I would imagine are unfamiliar to people or to concepts like the optical illusion of the heat rising, I tend to want to put information in my author's notes, because I feel that if the person reads it and then reads the clarifying information at the bottom, it allows my reader to enjoy the poem more. And if that's the purpose of the poetry, is for the reader's enjoyment. So if I don't help them with what my references are sometimes, then I think it's me just being arrogant and not clarifying things. And I don't want to do that.
Well, you did
beautiful.
Thank you.
Great comment, confess. And Frank, what did you think?
Well, you know, I really, you know, this is a brevity, but I really like the brevity here. Now, I like the way she just embodied the whole notion of dancing to silent music, using the background of the sun, you know, the cloudless horizon. But she brings us, you know, the elements of the sun there with the hues of tangerine and amber. You know, then she brings us, you know, the arid llano being presented in through an optical illusion in a parched portrait. You know, and then this is a wonderful line, the last two lines, the shimmering glass and the terrain, a mercurial phantasm dancing to silent music. This is just a beautiful write, you know, I think it was written, 6 days ago, and it's just a well-deserved piece. And easily can be a front page as well for many others tonight. But I really like this. It was sort of, you really caught my eye with this piece here.
Thank you very much, Frank. I appreciate this.
Oh, you're welcome.
When I put the word Llano in there, I was thinking about you.
Oh, yeah, it's a Spanish word. I knew that word.
And Zawa.
I think every time I use foreign text, I think of you and of Zawa.
Oh, thank you. You're so intellectual, Bobby, and I love how you put it on. I love how you put auto note or this glossary. It's really beautiful. I didn't see it. I looked it up before I saw it, and I said, "Oh, I should have waited." Forget that you do that. But I really love this poem, even though it's a brevity. It's so like there's so much in there. You feel like almost I'm there feeling the sun, the way it's so vivid, the sun ablaze across the cloud. The descriptive is so meticulous and so that you can really, with colors and heat, as if we are there, the torrid air, repeated arid again, and how it creates optical illusion. It's just beautiful. And I love, like, Frank, the last two lines. It's such a beautiful comparison. Added to it, the music and the silent music. I think it fits how the tree are treeless. It just fits perfectly. The silent, everything is silent. Really beautiful. I love it.
Thank you very
great
much, Zawa.
My pleasure.
Merci bien.
Bobby. Ah, je t'en prie.
Well said. Thank you, Zawa. Okay, I have your poem up whenever you're ready, Zawa.
Okay. Where is it? I'm sorry, I messed up. It's kind of dark poem too, but not as dark as where is it? Oh my gosh, I can't find it. Is it there? Maybe I should refresh.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, probably.
Okay.
Just refresh.
And how are we doing in time? Because it's kind of long. If it's okay if I only need to read English. Either way, it's fine.
No, both is fine.
Okay. My darkness, mon obscurité. Mon obscurité, ni le temps, ni l'espace, la conforme, à l'accable mon angoisse qui est née d'expériences horrifiantes de jadis, de la personnalité de mon ex absurde. Je ne la cherche ni la quête, l'obscurité. Toutefois, son nuage apparaît à l'heure où un bruit sensible me pétrit. Je sorte de mon sommeil en pleine nuit avec un cri d'effroi. Le manque de compassion de mon ex lui permettait guère d'être susceptible, saisir mes moments sensibles, s'obscurent. Il les voyait comme des anormalités. D'ailleurs, ses réactions agressives, douleurs pourtant, il savait leur cause, heureusement, loin de lui aujourd'hui et demain. Mais l'ombre de mon obscurité me suit toujours. Néanmoins, mon espoir j'ai métamorphosé infiniment dans un songe, dans un sourire, dans une fleur, dans un oiseau, dans une douce brise de vent. My darkness, neither time nor space confounds it. It overwhelms my anguish born from horrifying experience of the past and the personality of an absurd ex. I'm not looking for darkness, even though her cloud appears at a time when insensible noise meets me. I jump from my sleep in the middle of the night with a cry of fear. The lack of compassion of my ex prevented him to captivate my sensitive dark moments. Instead, he visioned them as abnormalities. His aggressive reaction exacerbated my pain, yet he knew their causes. Far from him today and tomorrow, but the shadow of my darkness still followed me. Nevertheless, my hope is metamorphosed infinitely in a dream, in a smile, in a flower, in a bird, in a gentle breeze of wind. End of poem.
Beautiful read, Zawa. I really love the French. And, you know, even though I can't understand it, but I do love it when you read it. But, you know, this poem speaks of the beauty that you have within you to let this darkness shine, metamorphosize, infinitely in a dream, like a smile, in a flower, in a bird, in a gentle breeze of wind. just beautiful for you to turn your darkness into such beauty. I thought it was just a wonderful rite. What did you think, Contessa?
Thank you so much.
I'm honestly going to say I've never heard something be as beautiful as it was in French. Like, you think French is like this beautiful language. It's romantic, it's sensual. And then when you read it in English, it just, it still was the same way. And usually, you know, English is like, oh, that's English. It's the way it's still written. It's like, at first when I heard it in French, I'm like, man, we don't even have to hear it in English, you know, because even though I didn't understand the French, I could still see the words. It's crazy, but it was so beautiful. And I love the way that when you first said it was dark, I wouldn't even know it was a dark poem, only because it still sounds so beautiful and it still has that imagery and it's not something I want to look away from. And I just thought it was beautiful. And I love the way you read it. I felt like your voice also captivated me even more. So thank you for the share.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much, Confess. Nice to meet you. Thank you.
Wonderful comment, Confess. And Bobby, what did you think?
Molto bene.
Thank you, God.
Squisito. I like the way you said it's dark, and it starts dark. You talk about the lack of compassion of my ex prevented him, prevented him to captivate my senses. He envisioned them as abnormalities. But you always have a way of lifting, of elevating the darkness into the light toward the end, far from him now today, but the shadows of my darkness still follow me. Nevertheless, my hope is metamorphosed infinitely in a dream, in a smile. And you cite these beautiful things in a flower, in a bird, in a gentle breeze of wind. There you've taken it, you've gone into the depths of despair, and yet at the end, you're lifting back into the light. And that is such an elegant way of resurrecting your spirit from the darkness. And that is so like you. This is such a beautiful piece. And longer than most of your other. This is very soulful. I really enjoy the salva. Squisito.
Well, thank you so much. Grazie mille.
Prego, Bobby. And Frank, what did you think?
Oh, do you want me to go Italian as well? Mi è piaciuto molto. Poema mi è piaciuto molto. No, I'll go back to English. I really thought I can get into French, but I'm not going to do that now. I'll just say one quick thing to her in French. Les mouvements exprimés sont très, très puissants. J'ai écouté les morceaux de tes poèmes et leur originalité. Oh, non, originalité. I've not heard it in this originality. And I thought it was beautiful. I know it's a very dark theme. I know it's very visceral. And I could tell that it's what you describe here is a very dark episode. I mean, a dark episode. But I really like the whole notion, the way you describe, the way you survive, the way you overcome, and the way you have the ability through your words to talk about these experiences. I have to say, I'm not one that does that much, but I do admire those people who really, through poetry or through metaphors or whatever manner, really do bring their life experiences to the fold and share it with us. And I think it's courageous, very much.
Thank you so much.
Well said. Thank you, Frank. Beautiful job, Sala. Okay, so I've got Casey Day's poem, and he has a SoundCloud, so we'll play that.
Bloody Dancer. She dances across the edge of your blade, pulling the pins out of each smoke grenade, knowing that there is a price to be paid, ruining the balance in such masquerades. Raised up by wolves, she moves unafraid, baring her teeth, will not become prey, spotting foe sheep from miles away, hunting the hunters, playing the game. And the faux sheep cry, together they sing, don't cause a problem imagining things, it's just a gesture, don't ask where it went, a grope, a feel, take a compliment. The faux sheep they win again and again, burning the wings off of angels and then burying them under sin upon sins, taking their voices and leaving them pinned. But she has seen these creatures firsthand, watched them unravel, hope strand by strand, drowning the sun in clouds of black sand. They relish their demons like salt on the land. So she bares her teeth and goes for the throat, choking on lies, refuting the goat, making a mess of the story they wrote about young men needing to sow their oats. For daughters and mothers whose screams went unheard, generation and generations of leaving things blurred, she fought with a fury that most found absurd, listening to too many songs by shepherds. And the faux sheep cry, together they sing, don't cause a problem imagining things, it's just a gesture, don't ask where it went, a grope, a feel, take a compliment. But the daughters of wolves howl in the night, you can't take our voices with darkness and slight, and dare you think our bark is worse than our bite, remember our mothers are holding the light. She dances across the edge of your blade, pulling the pins out of each smoke grenade, knowing that there is a price to be paid, ruining the balance in such masquerades.
Wow. Yeah, it was a beautiful read. And, you know, this is a hard-hitting poem about, you know, women and their place in society and their suggested place in society, I would say. But just a fantastic rhetorical piece on that whole subject of women being dominated and owned by men, a grope, a feel, take a compliment. You know, women have been abused throughout the centuries, and unfortunately things are slowly starting to shift, but I thought this was a fabulous take on her subject matter. Confess, what did you think?
Yeah, I definitely read this by Casey. I love it. I love, me and Pam was talking about the other day where, you know, repetition and poetry sometimes can be, you know, nodding on your head and you're like, oh gosh. But like for this poem particularly, it definitely gave more power. It definitely gave more imagery. It definitely let you know this is exactly what I'm saying. I'm saying that, you know, We keep getting told as women, and no shade to the man, but as women, you know, we always get told to be in our place, to stay in our place, to cook that meal, to you know, care to the man and play this game, to be married and to be held down, I guess, to be, you know, committed in this commitment relationship. And I feel like sometimes it's a one-way street, and again, no shade to man. But women were brought up to play that commitment game, to be the good woman, to be that loyal girl, to be that the one who holds you down, you know. And she definitely played on the characterization pretty good, personification very well, and imagery very well. And I just loved it. I love this poem.
Thank you, Confess. And Bobby, what did you think?
Oh, I thought this was a stunning, absolutely stunning write of the empowerment of women and the indictment of the imposition of the traditional male or female role playing, the mold that we've had to fit for so many years. You can't do that because you're a girl, or you don't look like a Marine. Well, shit, what does a Marine look like, you know? Or you don't look like a you know, you have no idea how many times I've heard that. You know, just because I had blonde hair down to my waist. You don't look like a Marine. Fine, well, what does a Marine look like, you know? The stereotypes that women have had to struggle against, and this the refrain that she's got, don't with the faux sheep. I love that characterization. Together they sing, don't cause a problem. Imagining things, it's just a gesture. Don't ask where it went. A grope, a feel, take a compliment. I thought that was such a powerful passage right there, and then she uses it as a refrain, which I think is wonderful. And then she repeats the first stanza. It closes with the first stanza again. It adds to the emphasis, to the gravitas of the piece. But the storytelling in this is in the metaphors. This is just bloody brilliant. And while other folks were commenting, I grabbed this up and threw it on a recommendation as a front page pick, because I think this is very deserving. And not only that, but I think her read was exquisite. Just to hear her read this in her own voice with her own emotions and emphasis on it just made it that much better.
Absolutely. Thank you, Bobby. That was a great comment. And Frank, what did you think?
I'm sorry, guys. How do you actually post, like, how do you recommend that? How do you do that?
I can send it to you. I will send it to you.
Oh, okay, I was going to say, I can send it to you, too.
Thank you. Whoever sends it, you know, I'm all for it. Thank you. I'm sorry to interrupt.
You're welcome.
That's okay.
And
Frank, what did you think?
Well, I was waiting for an encore there, an applause from Bobby there. this is certainly.
I've been sanctioned about doing that.
Oh, all right. On the last note there. Seriously, I thought this was an extraordinary piece, an extraordinary read. I think this was one of the best pieces that I've actually heard and seen as well. You know, this whole notion, you know, in the short time that I've actually got to know her, Casey, you know, I find that she really writes a lot through her own experiences, you know, and she's really gone through a lot, you know, and I think that she does, like I said, an excellent job of conveying her emotions, her experiences, and her poetry, and this is no exception here. You know, it's a piece that, I wrote down here, I said it was, it had a powerful message, and it was a piece that exemplified the empowerment of a woman. You know, I'm not going to get into the details of men and women, but I truly believe that as men, we could learn a lot if we only took time to listen to women, you know, to our, it doesn't have to be our women, you know, just a woman in general. And I really like the whole notion here because it's very visceral what she talks about, a bloody dancer, you know. You go through you see that prompt there and you see what really is going on in this poem, and you think about how graceful she can be in the end to, you know, uplift us with this poem here. It's remarkable. I really was taken aback by this poem.
Great comment. Thank you, Frank. And Tawa, what did you think?
Oh, absolutely. I agree with everyone. I also going to commend it on the front page. It's incredible, right? It really is. As a woman, speak to all of us, our ancestor, grandma. I mean, she did it beautifully for daughters and mothers who screamed were unheard generation and generation. It doesn't matter where in the world. This is really applied to every woman, unfortunately. But the way she read it, the emotion and how she go up and down, and just really from the start to the end, outstanding, masterpiece, incredibly. I love it.
Great comment. Thank you, Sawa. Okay, Confess, I have the next write-up, if you wouldn't mind reading it, please. Hello, Confess?
I'm sorry. I mixed up with the one that's a pick, so it's the another priority of these are a few of my favorite things, correct?
Correct.
Okay, awesome. All right. forgotten passwords and laptops of dating, drivers who make turns without indicating, swearing in public makes me cringe within these are a few of my least favorite things. Polger and sneezers, sneezers who don't cover their faces, bigoted people who hate other races, litter and roll size and not in the bin. These are a few of my least favorite things. Unstable Wi-Fi and cold-calling salesmen, people who chew with their mouth gaping open, troublesome neighbors who make a great din. These are my few of my favorite, least favorite things. Unruly children defying their parents, traffic jams, sitting in dogs, fouling pavements, men who are tied to their mom's apron strings. These are a few of my least favorite things. But when the sky is blue, when my friends smile, when a day is bright, I simply forget the least favorite thing, and then I just feel all right. End poem.
Wonderful read, confess. And, you know, this poem is definitely holding a few of my least favorite things as well. Coppers and sneezers who don't cover their faces, bigoted people who hate other races, litter on roadsides and not in the bin. These are a few of my least favorite things. I thought you did a beautiful parody to the These Are a Few of My Favorite Things song. Just a wonderful expression of that. And what did you think, Bobby?
Oh, I have always enjoyed Jabbo UK's sense of humor. She's very clever. I love the stories that she's told us in the past. And all of her poetry has a very personal touch to it. I mean, she doesn't have to fabricate. Everything she's lived and said and told us has been really interesting. And this little share with us of her least favorite things is just, I call everyone's attention to the title, Least Favorite Things Number 3. So apparently there's a 1 and 2 out there that crave our attention, and I'm sure they'll be just as entertaining as what she's done here with the very well-known song, A Few of My Favorite Things. I think she's shared more than one of our pet peeves. I agree with you that drivers who make turns without indicating, that's one of mine also. So, and then the unruly children defying their parents and traffic jams. I mean, she's got quite a litany of things over there that are very relatable. So I thoroughly enjoyed this and her sense of humor.
Absolutely. Thank you, Bobby. And Frank, what did you think?
I mean, what more can I say? This is a wonderful display of humor here. Her parody was remarkable. I commend her all the time. You know, I've never met her, but I've met her through her poetry, and I could just imagine what her personality must be. You know, she brings that English wry humor, you know, a lot of her pieces, and I really like that. You know, it's less seen nowadays, but I thought inconsistent as well. I just like the parody here, and I really like the whole notion there of giving us there her pet peeves there, what are her favorite things, or a few of her favorite things. I thought it was great, pal, and it's always a joy to come across one of her poems. You know, I would love to hear one of her poems read in her voice. I've not come to hear that yet.
Great comment. Thank you, Frank. And Satwa, what did you think?
I agree with everyone. I just love her stories. I can't wait to really read her stories. Beautifully said. She has a great storytelling. It's a gift, and her sense of humor adds to it. And who doesn't agree with all of what she put there, really? Just, I like her honesty. She's just being blank honest. And at the same time, she didn't really just put that. She ended up with a beautiful thought, with happy thoughts and what she likes. But when the sky is blue, when my friends smile, when the day is bright, I simply forget the least favorite things, and then I just feel all right. You kind of brush them away, even if they bother you. You're not going to nag on it. It bothers. It's normal. I love that. Just let go and move on.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you, Sawa. Okay, I have the next poem up. It's by Martha Gettle, and she has a recording, so I will play that.
I like the poem. No, I'm kidding.
Oh, I'm sorry, confess. Go ahead, please.
It's okay. No, I agree with all of you. I was just being a thinker, but no, I definitely wanted to make mention of the definitely of how I'm sweet right now, but if you don't freaking turn your turning signal on, oh, I'm a whole different person. How dare you, you know? But no, go ahead and move on. I just wanted to say that.
No, that was wonderful. Thank you. The best. Okay, I thought we had a SoundCloud from Martha here, but I don't see it in the studio. So I'll just double check here. Frank, intro, Casey, Cleo's poet, Sawa. No, we don't have it. So I will read for Martha Gettle, and it's called You Complete Me. Look in your eyes. The look in your eyes, the smile on your face, the way that you just touch makes my heart race. Your love lifts me higher than I've ever been. Baby, it's your smile that drives me around the bend. There's so many ways that you lift me high. Just the thought of you makes my heart fly. So many ways you feed my heart, it's true. Baby, I still get lost in every part of you. And my heart just lifts and flies when you get that look in your eyes. Baby, I couldn't ask for anything more than to be the one that you adore. The sweet I love yous whispered in my ear when you reach out and pull me near. The way my heart beats in my breast as I snuggle close to you, my head on your chest. And my heart lifts and flies when you get that look in your eyes. Baby, I couldn't ask for anything more than to be the one you adore. Baby, you drown me in your love. You fulfill all that I've ever dreamed of. The parts of you, they feed my soul. You complete me and make me whole. That was a beautiful poem, full of love and just touching insight and expression. I thought it was just beautifully done. And confess, what did you think?
I love it the way that there's a kind of, I'm trying to think of the poetic term for it. I don't have my poetic books with me. Okay, hold on. I'm going to find it. But so the sounds that I really love the best is the sweet I love you whispered in my ear. When you reach out and pull me near, the way my heart leaps in my breast as I snuggle close to you, my head on your chest. This reminds me of my husband. Like, we've had our little moments, but you'll see it in my poetry where I moved away for a while. I've been away from my husband a while. But you miss people that truly just has your heart, right? And when you have this emotion here that whisper in my ear, like everyone can whisper in your ear and it gives you chills. It's the one you love that gives you chills. So she just had me reflect, like, that is exactly how I feel. So it becomes relatable. I have an imagery here that kind of helps me understand her poem. And then I love the rhyme for sure. I was telling Pam the other day on the show how my teacher kind of made me not like rhyme because he hated rhyme. And, you know, sometimes rhyme can be too repetitive, but here again, it gives you more of the picture of what they're saying, imagery. So here in the rhyme is beautiful, and I appreciate it. So thank you.
Well said. Thank you, confess. And Bobby, what did you think?
This is very relatable. Martha's poetry can be counted on to be just a share of how she feels about things. Her poetry is very genuine. It's very down to earth. I know I've said that before, but it is one of those pieces that you can sit down and anyone can read it and appreciate it and understand it and cleave to a certain part of it and relate to it. And this piece is no exception. She's shared with us how she feels about who she loves, and what elation she gets from, like she says in her refrain, when you get that look in your eyes, I couldn't ask for more than to be the one that you adore. And who among us doesn't know how that feels? You know, my heart lifts and flies when you get that look in your eyes. She's always got something genuine to say with her pieces. And I do appreciate, by the way you tried to channel her in the beginning. That was a nice touch. but seriously, her pieces are a pleasure to read and to listen to because her words are so real.
Yeah, I agree. Thank you, Bobby. And Frank, what are your thoughts?
Well, I have to say that was a great rendition there, Gray. I thought you did a magnificent job there. You know, I was waiting for you singing there, but nevertheless, I thought it was great, man. I really like the notion here. I like her poetry, you know, the notion of love that's ascribed to this piece. It's very much as what Bobby said. It's relatable, you know. You know, I don't think, even if you're not in love right now, I mean, most of us have been in that phase of love, you know, when it's been reciprocated, of course. And the way she describes, whether it's a song or whether it's through a poem, you know, her emotions are very, you know, they're very genuine. You know, they may be seen, you know, simplistic, but I think times when we really, you know, emote and we write poetry, sometimes it's better to go to the simple sense or the simple nature of a poem of a right than to use too many metaphors that perhaps, you know, obfuscates one or confuses one too much. Because you want to get that person to read and reach, you know, reach deep in down to understand the meaning of the poem. And I think she does a wonderful job here with this poem. I like the way she throws in, because I've seen it before, baby, which is not really seen much nowadays. And I really like that. It's a bit of a... I like that as a man. I think it's very, very seductive there.
Absolutely, yeah. Thank you. And Sawa, your thought?
Yeah, I'm going to pick up like where Frank said. It's very simple. I think I love how she like she's speaking to him directly. She doesn't need to have it like sophisticated or out of her way. Just sincere, coming from the heart. That's why I love her poem, and I really like also what. What Bobby said, that she tried to, I was smiling. I had to put myself on mute because you really did. And I love that. I love how she just, the way she sing it, the way she feel, we can feel it, genuine. And it's beautiful to see people love each other like this. Just touch, really move your heart. I really like it. So, amazing.
Well said. Thank you, Sawa. Okay, Bobby, I have the next write up, if you wouldn't mind, please.
Not at all. Go to, okay, we're opening something called From 4,500 Miles Distant. And it's by Ava Palhazi, otherwise known as Wednesday's Tantum. From 4,500 Miles Distant, your unbodied presence completes my quietude. As December drums, the frost's triumphal dance, crystal constellations spark my solitude. Your unbodied presence completes my quietude as I track your lack inward to myself, while crystal constellations spark my solitude and the earth divides our ripped apart exile. As I track your lack inward to myself, while this astral path by a homecoming star and the earth divides our ripped apart exile. Familiar stranger, I don't know who you are. This astral path lit by a homecoming star, yet behind oriental identity, familiar stranger, I don't know who you are, though I've been loving you from eternity. Yet behind oriental identity, now winter obscures the past lives, passageways. Though I've been loving you from eternity, kindling our dim deja vus, shared twin flame rays. Now winter obscures past lives, passageways, as December drums triumphal dance, kindling our dim deja vu shared twin flames from 4,500 miles distance. End poem.
That was a beautiful read, Bobby. And this is a touching poem about separation and the emptiness therein. Although kindling dim deja vu's shared twin flame rays, just a beautiful write. What did you think, Confess?
Oh, okay. I'm like, I thought I was on mute. Okay, good. Again, that was a beautiful read. It definitely brought the poem to life. It was the part where it says, this astral path lit by homecoming star, yet behind oriental identity, familiar stranger, I don't know who you are, though I've been loving you from eternity. To me, that stanza is like, say for instance, I'm sorry you guys, I know I'm long-winded, but here in that stanza alone, it says to me, it's like being German-American, right? Like Bukowski. It's like I have this identity, yet have I actually been to Germany? Have I actually been to being able to appreciate my culture? That's what I get out of that line and that sounds like. I could be way off, but that's what I get. I get that from a lot of cultural aspects, especially being African-American. You never know, you know, where you're from. And then that stanza alone just kind of makes me feel that way. You know, it gives me that relatability. Like, who am I? Sometimes I, you know, sit and think, like, I've done my 23andMe. I know I have all this little stuff in me, but how can I actually identify there? So I love that stanza, and I love the imagery. And I love some of the personification that's in this poem. I think it's beautifully written and definitely a great read.
Excellent comment. Thank you, Confess. And Bobby, what did you think?
Oh, I found this poem fascinating. First off, I've just been introduced to another form of poetry, the pantoum, which I'm reading here is a poem of any length composed of four-line stanzas, which in the second and fourth lines of each stanza serve as the first and third lines of the next stanza. The last line of a pantoum is often the same as the first. I'd never heard of this before, and this is a very rigid structure. And to be able to tell such a beautiful, intricate story using such a confining format is real artistry. This mm-hmm. is just an exquisite piece. I enjoyed the storytelling. I thought it was beautifully done. The emotions just radiate through this of the longing to be with the person that they're separated from. They've been separated from so long. They feel they don't know them as well as they used to. But it's a beautiful piece. I've stuck it not only in my favorites, but I've also thrown another recommendation at an FPP because I think this deserves to be on the first page.
Mm-hmm.
Great comment. Thank you, Bobby. And Frank, your thoughts?
Yes, I'll be brief here. I just thought the poem was extraordinary. Metaphors were fantastic. It had a cosmic feeling to it. I like that whole notion of love. You know, we describe love in many facets. When it's written in this facet here, you know, with the metaphors, you know, of the cosmic feel, it makes it more fascinating. It does for me because the imagery conjures many things. I thought it was overall it was a fantastic write.
Great comment, thank you, Frank and Sawa. What are your thoughts?
I agree with everyone. Stunning. I'm sorry, I just wasn't earlier. Like beautiful read, Bobby. Really stunning. The emotion, you can feel them, how very tenderly and gracefully. Just, I love the same sense that that confessed speaks. It's just so beautiful. It moved me deeply. And I'm going to help you, Bobby, but also recommend it.
Well, thank you all for calling in to share your hearts, your minds, your voices, and most especially your time. Much love, poets, and have a good night.
Thank you so much.
Good night.
Good night.
Good day.
Thank you. Good night.
Buenas noches.
Good night.
Good night, all.
Good night.